Hi, everyone. My name, again, is Claude from InCycle Software. So actually, I'll just start at the beginning, just talking a little bit of where I'm coming from. Again, I'm a bit of a slightly older guy, so as a previous presenter, started a few years back. And actually, when we think about... Oh, that doesn't seem to be working. All right, I'll use this instead. So when we think about a few years back, actually when I started managing development teams, life was pretty easy. Basically, we had users and stakeholders on one side, and my development team I had to manage on the other side, and we actually just had them on the other side of the wall. Didn't really care too much about them, and here and there we'd throw a version on the other side of the wall, and they'd have to deal with it. And, you know, life was good. We had this nice waterfall way of working, which made it very easy for us. It was not good for everybody. So along the way, over the last 5-10 years, we basically have a lot of change coming to somebody managing development teams. And a lot of the work we do with people who have to implement changes in the way their teams work, now we need to go with agile. We need to look at all these new tools and practices. One of the issues we see with all these great new tools and practices is that development teams have been talking about great new tools and practices for 20 years that make them a lot better. And actually, it's not necessarily obvious from a management perspective to see that. So there's a bit of a generation gap from learning all of that. And in many cases, the people who are responsible or will manage or will fund projects and ALM improvement projects are people coming from that perspective of basically where I'm coming. So we also look at the application lifecycle, actually the role of web development was, again, in the past we had that little group of developers and sometimes testers, but more and more we have an expanded view of what ALM is. It covers a lot of roles, not only just the developers, Visual Studio with Team System and now Visual Studio ALM actually is expanding a lot of that. And we see in vNext that basically we're looking at managing everything from one end to the other. Actually, when we look at what's available, and I won't describe all that actually, but basically we go from requirements to tests to managing our tasks to building to automated UI tests and, you know, managing manual work, eventually delivering to the customer, doing code profiling, managing wikis and tracking advancement with reports and everything. Actually, there's a lot happening in there. When you look at everything as somebody who's managing development teams, what you have to put in place, that actually that scope that is all done with TFS and Visual Studio, right? So there's a lot. When you look just at the sum of the practice you have, actually there's quite a bit of them. It actually gets a bit tougher when you go, you have to do this for many teams. So for every team, you need to go and actually implement all these changes one after the other. So it becomes quite quickly very unmanageable. To compound that, you actually have to go and implement. Again, we're looking at the world now no longer just in implementing tools. We know, and we've lived through some of us lived through the 90s going with more layer type project where we define prescriptive everything how a project would work and have basically a good, you know, a process layer well defined, or we'd have other projects where we'd look at tools, implement the tools, and then wonder why they're not adopted, why we're not using. The idea is all of these we need to actually implement across the layers. So not just who does what when from a process perspective, but also which tools we're using at that point. And we also need to train the people. It's nice to have a new tool and process that says you need to automate this test there. You actually need to learn how to automate tests properly. So all this basically creates this massive change that you have to do, which is basically very similar to the traditional how do you eat an elephant? It's the same problem, and obviously you do it one bite at a time, right? So what does that mean to us? So how do we do the one bite at a time? Actually, and again, I just want to put a parenthesis there, the monkey represents me, not anybody else, me thinking about it. So So basically, do I have a process that exists that I can think of that basically helps me put changes in small pieces, deliver value as I go in a manageable way? And actually, there is. And that's what we've been putting in organization and working with. It's Scrum. Scrum works with a lot of the principles that we can apply to ALM improvement. So a lot of what we've done over the last few years in our engagement, and that's what we actually included into a TFS template, which we call Blueprint, and I'll explain why we call it Blueprint. Sorry. But basically, it's an agile-based TFS template to implement a process improvement project. So it's really taking all the good concept we have in Scrum and Agile that makes us deliver better regularly, bring values to our customer. The only difference is instead of building software, we're building development organization. We're improving our teams. And that's the perspective that we're looking for. The other thing that's interesting about Blueprint, it's actually free. So it's available for download on the web. I'll have the link at the end. And it is a TFS template. So a lot of the capabilities we have in TFS are available directly in there. So if you know how to use TFS, you know how to use a template, you'll be able to use a blueprint right away. So when we look at saying, okay, we're doing process improvement, how do we apply the Scrum principle to that? So we had to adapt it a little bit. So look at kind of what's the principle behind all the components of Agile and find the equivalent for these type of projects. So, again, we have the same traditional approach where we have an improvement backlog. And the difference for us is that it's the equivalent of the product, the PBI, instead of user stories, what we have is improvement items. So the concept is basically an improvement I'm doing for one given team at one point on one practice. So that's for us is an improvement item. So instead of writing reports and, you know, on which tool we should use or creating long studies, we actually pick, let's get this team working this way for this specific practice. Like in Scrum, we'll break it down, create iteration. We actually extend the iteration for 4 to 8 weeks instead of the traditional 2 to 4. The reason is that it's change, and a lot of the people we're working with, the team that we assemble to work on the project itself, are not typically all full-time. There's also, we need to train people on the teams, and they actually have, you know, portfolios to deliver on as we go. So what we see from a change management perspective, 4 to 8 weeks iterations make more sense for us to actually book, plan, get the people in the rooms, train them, and actually do all the tasks we need to do so we get our improvement done in practice. The same way we're going to run our regular meetings, and at the end we'll deliver an increment for us instead of a potentially shippable product increment as we have in Scrum. It's actually an improvement increment. For us, an improvement increment is something that actually the team is using on a live project for real. It's basically, it's done. They're using it and they're starting to use a practice on its own. We've added also at the first part where we normally would do our release plan. Instead, we call it a cycle plan. We added the blueprints. The blueprint basically is actually a series of templates or standardized improvement items. Again, we've implemented TFS and process change in, you know, 400, 500, 600, 700 teams over the last 7 years, 8 years. So, and there are some of them that are very standard. So what we did is we tried to capture a few of the basic ones. We have, I think, 19, 20 in the blueprint to help prime the pump, to help think of this is kind of where we could start. One of the issues we found is, again, for the a lot of the management and executive, for them, all of Agile and all these push, they read it, they see it in the magazine, but there's a, when you translate it, that into smaller practices, there's a sense of comfort that is often missing to actually just go and put the time and effort to do these improvements and the sense of control. It's often, yes, I want to have an agile organization and use all the latest practices, but I don't know where to start. So the idea of the blueprints is really a point to start from. I'll talk a little bit about more about that. So, for example, for us, examples of blueprints, are really things that we do specifically, like automate our release process or start using unit tests on one team or adopt Scrum. For us, Scrum adoption is one practice of work management, and there's obviously some corollary that you'll do with it as how you write your requirements or unit testing and so on and so forth. But when you adopt, when you go forward, the key is to, again, break them down into a series of initiatives that you can do and implement into your 4 to 8 weeks iteration. So when we're looking at our improvement item, if we, for those who are Scrum practitioner, we have the invest, which is basically what a good requirement is, independent, has its own value. So we kind of did the same idea for our improvement item and from the way we're doing them. So the first thing for a good improvement item is I need to be able to do it into my iteration. It needs to be fully implemented. So we're going to put this in place, let's say release management. So, you know, we're going to do a study, then we're going to do this. And actually what works better is to pick one app, one team, and try a tool and do it and get it done. And you can do that in 2 months. You basically scope things so that you have something fully implemented. The same thing for unit testing. You'll need to train people. You'll need to start using it, put it in your definition of done and whatnot. Just basically do it. So define your items in such a way that you can have it completely implemented. If you cannot think about it in a way that it can actually be in practice in a team, then work on your backlog. As a team who's trying to bring change, you haven't done your homework enough. You need to really be able to say, I can see my change and I can implement it fully. Each improvement item should bring an immediate improvement. So it's nice to change, but actually we need to be able to define this is what will improve, this is the reason, and it's not we'll implement this and then in 2 months and 3 months and 6 months we'll get better. When we work on something, we train people, we want basically to have results right away or at least very regularly. That's also probably the same reasoning as we have in Scrum, is the ROI on my improvement project happens as I go. So instead of waiting till the end and we do this big bang implementation of all the pieces of ALM and all the systems involved, you basically deliver pieces team by team, and the teams improve and they go a bit better, and you get that momentum of the basically that continuous improvement feel that the team will go. Teams getting better is also that there's a momentum there. Developers, testers, professionals want to be. You cannot be better than the team you're in. If I'm in a team that doesn't do unit tests, that doesn't write for performance and so on and so forth, as an individual, I won't be that much better than my team. If my team's a 3 out of 10, at best I'll be a 4 out of 10. So the idea of starting to implement improvement on the team and the team getting better, usually we get a very interesting momentum. The fact of doing it through small items that they can commit to in a 2 month period just helps really create that continuous improvement momentum that we see. The improvement item needs to be demonstrable in practice at the end of the sprint. So again, the same way I'll talk about the roles later, but the same way as we have in Scrum, in our framework, at the end of the improvement iteration, we go back and we present to the product owner or the equivalent role, we present the improvement itself. So what we're actually expecting is an improvement in practice. We want, instead of showing working code as the way we calculate advancement, for these type of improvement project, what we're showing is actually a team going into the tools or the process they have, the results that they should have, the artifact they have, and actually demonstrate to the stakeholders that it's actually they're now working this way. And if we don't think we'll be able to work this way, we manage with the same Scrum mechanism, we'll work the backlog and so on and so forth. But the key is that the measure is that the team is working in a different way. That's the only measure of advancement. Everything else, again, is not a real improvement. It's an intention of getting an improvement down the road. And it can be done in one iteration. One of the ways also to help think about, because one of the first things you'll need to do is to actually come up and and create your initial backlog. So the blueprints will give you starting points on where to start and give you ideas and give you some of them you'll use right away, others you'll modify. One other thing we find is at the beginning of an improvement effort, there's an assessment tool actually available on the Microsoft ALM site, which has been there for quite a while. The idea is that you look at the various practices you have in development. There's something like 53. And for each of them, you actually can look at the world from what's our current maturity level from a process organizational perspective. So are we using the same process on different teams? Is what a team using actually feeding the next practice and the next workers? Are we using the same vocabularies? Do we have metrics on them? Is it repeatable? So the idea, again, we can look at on the x-axis, really the level of maturities that you have for a given practice. And then on the other side, not everything is important for every team. So for one team, performance testing might be extremely important because they have a public site with a lot of load. For other teams, they do, you know, a system for a few internal users and finance. The impact is not the same. So the other axis is really to look at what's the impact of going to the current good or best practice, or as the earlier speaker was mentioning, really good practice for now. So basically getting to what we can get to with what we have in terms of tools and process. And basically, so will that be a significant impact for us? Really change the way we work, give us an order of magnitude, either productivity, quality, predictability, improvement, or is it something that's going to be significant or just a slight improvement or pretty much status quo? And when we look at basically the matrix we get that first quadrant, which is things we're really not good at, and that has a lot of impact. And then we can go around and look at things that, you know, we're not good with less impact, or things were good but which has a lot of impact. And you see, you know, we go from the urgent to the improve quickly to the you know, enhance, and the others are just maintaining the practice you have. So that's a good way to start thinking on where we should be going. Often we go a lot with tools-driven training. The tools are important. The tools will support the process, but what's important is the practice. So it's who's using it, what, when, with the proper tool. So this helps us think on that perspective. But the practice assessment actually will show you where your problems are, or where you don't have a problem for the maintained ones. And again, so that's something somebody said. The problem actually is, in our framework, we don't want to prioritize problem. We want to prioritize solution. And at one of the TED Talks, Bjorn Lomborg added, actually, this basically, if we prioritize problems, the biggest problem we have in the world is that we all die. But we don't have a technology for that. So it really shows the fact that prioritizing problems is not what we need to do. What we need to do is actually create our backlog. And again, our improvement backlog is a backlog of solutions. And that's kind of the tricky part. That's where often we see where it kind of falters, is we know what we should do. We see all these technologies, but how do we go forward and do it? And the key is really creating a backlog and using the mechanism we have with Scrum. As we do on Scrum project, the same thing applies for an improvement project or an improvement effort. We have the preparation phase, preparation sprint, sprint zero, however we want to call it, which basically is setting the canvas for the rest of the project. In Scrum, we talk about high-level architecture decisions. For our improvement projects, what we're looking at is basically, let's figure out all the tools we have. Earlier in the panel, they were mentioning that small teams, it's usually easier. Bigger teams, we might have to interact with more systems, do more integrations along the way. So the idea is that we need to figure out what are the tools we have. Obviously, in our case, we work a lot with everything that's in Visual Studio and TFS, but there are other things and other systems that we need to interact with, from timesheets to help desk systems and so on and so forth. So we need to figure out what we have. We also need to figure out what we currently have in place from other technologies that we might have to integrate with or that we might have to convert as we go. That's kind of background information. That's kind of our canvas on which we'll actually do our work. We'll need to look also at organizational structure. Sometimes what we try to do is, again, we need to have a sense of what the structure is and what, if there are major obstacle or change, if you have, you know, some of our customers are unionized, so there's some aspect there. When you create your initiatives and your improvement items, you need to factor those elements in the decision. And we find doing the assessment at the beginning will flush a lot of the information you need for that. That's basically very useful on that sense too. And then you need to pick kind of what's our basic process we'll use, not to do our project, but the process we'll use for the teams from a work management aspect. So are we using, you know, MSF Agile or CMMI, Scrum, Kanban, or whatnot? So there's a decision that basically will affect a lot of the practices. Not all of them, not everything's touched by whether we're using Scrum or not, but a lot of them are. So we need to have that sense. And again, the key is a little bit like we're looking at Scrum. We need to decide enough high level so we can actually handle the changes at once we'll implement the different improvement items that we go forward with. Then we need to assemble our team. Here again, we need to make a distinction between the teams on which are basically what we're working on, so the teams that will receive the changes and have them, and the team that brings the change for our process improvement project. So here I'm talking about the process improvement team. Often you might have some consultants, you have some people part-time, sometimes large organization, we have some people full-time, part of it. But basically it's the same thing. We need to assemble a team of people who will do the tasks of that we need to implement our change and implement our various improvement items. So we have the same role. Mechanics works nicely, so we have a Scrum Master. We have the team members, again, that can come from the various groups we need to actually run those tasks and do them. And we have the team sponsor. Actually, it's the equivalent of the product owner in Scrum. So the person who dictates the priorities, the person we actually go back to and present the result at the end of the iteration, typically a director, executive, the person who's responsible for the development organization should play that role. So we changed the name to team sponsor instead of team owner. We felt that they never really owned the team. But it's that same principle. What they own, though, is how the team works from a practice perspective. And one thing we figured out, which was kind of a nice side effect, is our team sponsor is now playing a role in Agile. Actually, he's going into Blueprint every day, every week. He's entering product backlog items or improvement items in our case. He's tracking the task. He's using the reports. There's a significant value in having the team sponsor being involved as he goes through in there. So dog fooding for everybody involved in change, specifically if you're going Agile or any of the newer Agile approach, there's a huge value in having your executive playing that role. When they go now and look at the team and how the team works, they understand it because they do it. They're part of it. They play a role. So there's a really, really significant value in there. A lot more than we expected when we did the first templates a few years back. So over the years, we found that cannot be overstated. And then we run the iteration, very similar to Scrum. So we take every one of our improvement items, we break down the tasks. The team that puts the work in place, the different teams will self-assign the task. And again, we track the tasks from the people providing the change. So the team themselves, when we look at the people who will go receive it and take the trainings or whatnot, for us, basically, they're the customer to the change process. Obviously, they have some tasks to do on their own. They'll need to participate. But the key, the main team is really the people bring it. We need also to decide on our Scrum meeting rhythm. Like Scrum, basically, we're looking at development, people who are mostly committed to that one project. So a daily meeting makes a lot of sense. In the context of a change project, We find daily might actually the tax of the daily meeting might become a bit heavy, so the team needs to figure out its own rhythm. So that's one of the places where you adapt a little bit, maybe every 2 days, twice a week, every week. So depending on the effort and the speed at which you're going, you'll adjust your rhythm in such a way that based on your average length of task that you meet as regularly as they are. And again, these are not things that I can do and just work on. It's I need to book people, I need to do other things. So there's a slightly different rhythm that will change by organization. Another key things we've seen also is the idea of typically in Scrum, we break down all the tasks at the beginning of the sprint, and then we do everything we need to towards the end. In change management, sometimes we need to actually work a bit ahead of time because you need to book people and you need to book rooms. It's funny. In some organization, what's the most difficult thing to get is a room to do a training, right? That's and it's something like we see in a, you know, there's no organization that builds enough training rooms for some reason. So you need to plan a little more ahead at some of the details so that you reserve those resources in contention. And then at the end of the iteration, basically, again, as I was saying, we demonstrate. So the team, and actually it might be multiple teams if we add improvement items from multiple teams, they come back in and they go to the stakeholders and the team sponsor, so usually the director or executive, and actually they have to demonstrate, plug in into their server or plug in into their tool and basically show that the way they're working now and actually on the change that they have. Then you'll do a retrospective on your improvement project as we do in other Scrum project. The key there, visibility drives commitment, is a key factor in this. What we find is before we implemented the structure and more formalism around the improvement project, is people would come in and say, yes, we'll try to, you know, change our source control in the next month or two or three. And there's no real commitment because they have another job to do. And they always have the excuse, well, too bad, I had the other job. And sometimes it's an excuse, it's the real case. So there's no commitment necessarily on the resource to meet the time to make it, or on management to actually make sure that they're under conditions where they can make the time. So the idea of having this visibility on a very, very regular basis where you go back as a team to the other teams, other stakeholders, executive, and where you said, yes, we commit, we'll change, we'll implement unit testing and code coverage for this improvement iteration. The fact that there's a real deadline and that visibility and seeing the task, whether they're getting done or not done over the 2 months, actually makes organization really do the change. And that's a big, big impact. To have the visibility for it and the to be able to track it brings a lot of value in making sure that our improvement project gets the resources and the commitment it needs. So really, visibility really will drive the commitment. The other thing we adapted from Scrum and Agile is in Scrum you'll do your release plan, which basically you have all these various sprints. In our case, we call them improvement iterations. And basically, you're going to have a number of cycles or release where basically you are potentially shippable at every sprint, and then you'll release maybe every 2-3 sprints. The equivalent for us of a release, since we make the change in practice every iteration, is the idea of actually going back and reassess, so have we advanced? Are we reaching our goals? And the way to do the reassessment, actually, so for us, those are the key points where we step back again, look at our backlog, think of our priorities. If anything changed in the background of the company and portfolio and so on and so forth, so we can basically think about and look at our advancement on its own. So that's really the idea of what you want to do, you know, every 4, 5, 6 months. Sit back, and actually, you're actually looking at the work of your improvement team. Once you're further along into your improvement project, you'll start getting a lot of metrics on development for some of them. So you'll get, you know, bug rates and throughput and whatnot. For other things, you won't. So the idea is to do actually the reassess the practice if we did it at the beginning, or we can just go and reassess them. We don't need One of the approach we started to do is actually, again, borrowing from Scrum practices. Instead of doing interviews and you know, create an assessment report, we actually use the same way that we do planning poker to do estimation. We actually estimate our maturity level and impact using a planning poker approach. So we bring key people from the team or the teams, and basically we identify these are the you know, the characteristic for each of the maturity level. Then we take a practice and everybody flips their card on basically are they level 1, 2, 3, or 4. And then again we go from the lowest, justify why they think it's the lowest, the highest is the highest, and then basically we go through them using the Scrum approach of doing estimation. Well, we're estimating in our level of maturity, and again, then we can compare where we are versus where we were, and see if we actually had a good advancement from an improvement perspective. So that's kind of the principle how we've done that. So once we have the principle of Scrum, then the key is how do we tool this approach of agile improvement. And the key is what we've done is we created, as I mentioned earlier, a template. So what I'll do is I'll just jump into the TFS template. Let's just go here. All right, so it's a TFS template. It's very, very close. We based it very much on the Scrum template. And actually, we were fairly happy to see that we could actually take our 2010 template and point it to a Dev11 preview server, and actually it works directly in there. So there's kind of a upgrading and backward compatibility even on the developer preview is actually a lot stronger than I would have expected. So that being said, what we've added in terms of the template, it's really a series of work items. So when we look at it, what we're looking at right now is actually here in the queries, we have a planning sections, which is our blueprint library. So again, as I mentioned, we have about 19 work items that are created. Those are blueprints. So those are really kind of the template that you can use to create specific items for each of the teams as you go. So those, again, we created as is, let's pick one. So for example, automated testing, I'll just open this one. So again, we created some of them that meet the criteria that I've laid out earlier. So what we have on the work item itself is actually an objective of what we would try to do if we implement that. For example, here's to use, you know, everything we have from a automated testing capability in there. We have a benefit statement. So, again, we're trying to help the thinking from the executive or the team sponsor in understanding what's that piece of work specifically. And what we've added is more details, which is kind of for each of them, typically what's involved there. What would you look in there? What are the options? And again, it's not one shoe fit all. So it's more a description of what you would need to be in there. For example, here we say, well, following that, the team should be able to use all these different automated testing techniques. And actually, at the end, we describe, you know, should be self-trained, should you use external help, what's available. So on all of them, we're trying to give a sense of how that initiative could be done. And actually, in this case, for example, we're kind of saying, look, maybe you want to break it into 4 or 5 other ones, right? Because we want to have small enough that it's in one implementation. So you might say, instead of learning all about, you know, automating all this, maybe we'll start with a smoke test, and then we'll add something else, and we'll add something else. So that's the idea of the blueprint, is to give you some sense of basic basic templates, if you wish, for them. But the blueprint, you can add your own, you can modify them. It's really yours to manage, and specifically if those are initiatives that you're going to use for multiple teams. Again, you might have we need to integrate with this help desk system and create your initiative that says how you're going to do that for each time you bring a team into it. So when we look actually at the library itself, one thing we can do is actually right-click on one of the items. So right now I'm using code analysis, for example, starting to use code analysis in a team. And actually what I'm doing is I'm creating a copy of the work item. So I'm taking the blueprint work item, which is kind of in the library, the template to copy, and actually now I'm instantiated as an improvement item. So that's one that's going to go into my backlog of things to do. So now what it did, it just created an improvement item. So the improvement item is one that's going to go to my backlog. So the difference here is that actually the improvement item here, I can say, well, that's for my platform team using code analysis. I can pick which iteration that I'm going to go through. And again, in the iteration, I should have my cycle plan in there. In this case, I'll just leave it at the root level. So that's going to put it into my backlog. And then once I decide to take it from the backlog and do it to a specific iteration, I'll assign it to that specific iteration per se. So I'll just assign it, and basically I'll just put a priority. I'll put one, so we'll see it later on. The effort is actually, we can use the same approach we use in Agile to measure effort. So we can do a poker, and we're looking at the effort for the team. And it's relative effort. So again, we suggest using the Fibonacci 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13 to estimate the change effort that is involved from the change team. So in this case, it's a fairly small one. I'll just put 1 point. The business value, let's say it's 20 points. I use Fibonacci times 10 because I like when I bring it into Excel, when I divide by one to the other, it kind of makes bigger difference. Like it's easier to see 1.4 versus 2.1. It's easier to see 14 versus 21 or 10 versus 50. So for me, it's just the way I do it. Here, we actually wanted the customer added to add external costs. So you might have public classes or consulting that you're bringing in. So you can actually, again, it's TFS. You can take all of these, bring them into Excel, and work your budget that you have in there. And then basically, I'll just assign it to my sponsor, which would be myself, and then just save the work item. So that's basically how we use the blueprint. You can create your own, as I mentioned, and update them, change them. So once they're out of the blueprint, and again, we have additional queries that are made to help work with it, then you actually go into your improvement backlog where you'll see the list of elements that you have that is part of your backlog. I'll just refresh it. So basically here, for example, I have my different code analysis and agile work management and so on and so forth. So, and then some of these I'll pick for my next iteration. So once I get into my iteration, again, in the iteration itself, what you'll do is do as you do with the Scrum template regular, which is basically go in there. For example, here in my first iteration, I included the TFS configuration and the different tasks that are related to it. Again, very typical usage. And the key there is that having the executive go through that, follow it, track it, adds a lot of value. I mean, I'm putting a lot of value on that because that's what we've seen. We see now from the top to the bottom using the same vocabulary, same approach, same thinking. So here basically you have a task and you'd run it as a task in any other template where you'd put a priority remaining work, and then when the tasks are done, you basically diminish the remaining work. And like we have in the other templates, that drives a few metrics and a few reports to help us run our improvement project. And I'll just switch back to basically a few examples of reports where I have more data than what I've prepared. They need to be prepared over time. So the first is the iteration background burn down. Again, as part of the template, you have a portal where you have these four reports available and the backlog, again, available through a web browser going to the SharePoint portal that comes with every TFS project. So the iteration burn down is the same as we have in Scrum and Agile. So at the beginning, we have all the tasks that we've estimated work, and as we close them, we see how fast we're closing the work, we see how much is open, and it gives us a sense of are we advancing or not. for improvement project, we tend to see things not go as smoothly at this. We see as we get towards the end now, it drops more deeply, but at least we can track it as we go. The key is that it's visible. It's visible to everybody that's involved on the team. We have another one, which is the team progress. It gives us a sense of, for each team, what we've done, what we have now, how many items we have. So you kind of get kind of your program you're doing for each team, what they've been through. It gives you your history, so you can look at it from a team perspective. And here, for example, I'm looking at my portal teams, and we've implemented these things, and you see what they've committed to for this iteration and where they are from there. Again, that brings a lot of value from a tracking and visibility of our improvement project. We have the velocity, so we've put points, improvement points on all of them. And again, every iteration we run, we see kind of our capacity for change, how many points we're able to do as we go forward. And using those velocity points, when you put, we have this other report, the improvement burndown, which shows you all the work that you've identified and basically how fast you're burning through it. So are you adding and removing, where you're advancing? And again, using this and your velocity, you're able to have a good sense of how many more iterations you need to do with the current backlog that you have. So in conclusion, and the key benefits we see from there from using it from our customers is really the visibility and the commitment. I think I've talked quite a bit about that. The other thing, it's a ready-to-use tool with a number of items to start from. So there again, it makes it easy to go forward. Again, you can download it and then start using it right away. The dog fooding is very key. So to have everybody actually using the tools and Agile and the approaches as a way to get there brings a lot of value. This actually I wanted to show is from one of our customers. They have 21 teams. We did a project over 18 months going team by team, and actually it's on the Visual Studio. If you look in details, you see it's all in French. But basically, they do software for all the school boards that we have in Quebec. So it's a fairly sizable organization. And the key was, part of what we used a blueprint was really to transform them from pure waterfall and bring them over to Agile, source control, build, automated testing, release management, basically really going through the gamut. The team project kind of evolved quite a bit from the beginning to the end. As you go on new type of iteration, the first time you do one from the blueprint, we were pretty involved. And then when they're at team 2, 3, and 4, the team actually, they have their own change team now and internally to continue and basically use the framework, use the tools to go forward. Actually, they have a customer success story, which should come out in the next few days on their usage of Blueprint. But we thought it was very interesting. So basically, they're looking at they actually increase the work they do on new project by 50% while maintaining the commitments they had on the existing portfolio over that 12 to 18 months. Like many organizations, their customers are public sector. There's not a lot of budget, a lot of change. So they really needed to get their productivity going. And I think, as the vice president was saying, that the tool really helped on focusing on what we're doing. And that's a big part. When you work with a backlog, you're deciding what you're working on. At the same time, you're deciding what you're not working on, and you're fine with that. Often, we find that development manager or executives, specifically manager, more in the middle layer, you're going, man, if somebody really looks in detail there, and I can get whacked anytime because we're not doing this, we're not doing that. The idea of having a formal backlog, we're saying, yes, we're not doing automated testing or smoke tests because we're busy doing these other things. And then next sprint, we'll do these other things. So there's a real value from having understanding what we're working on and also not spending time on trying these other tools and doing all these other team-based energy and effort to redesign things and redesign process and reinvent the wheel in many different ways and in many different teams. The idea is basically we have an approach, we have a roadmap, we have clear goals, and then we focus on them and we get them done. And that, again, the team really, really improve over time. So to get started, The online assessment is available on the ALM Catalyst site. Actually, there's a link there also that brings it to the InCycle, the blueprint download site. And there's also on our site, again, you can go through ALM or directly, we have a page to download the blueprint itself. So it's freely available. What we're thinking to do for the next step with Blueprint, customer success story will come in the next few days. We're thinking of adding a blog forum. So some of our customers using it actually are coming up with kind of really nice blueprints. So the idea is that we want to add more blueprints, some of them coming from not just us and our experience, but from other experience. So we'll be adding a blog where we'll be able to discuss the blueprints and actually have people propose additional ones. And we'll provide a VNEX version, actually. It's 90% of the way done by actually doing nothing on the template, which is very interesting. So again, if you start using it, these projects, improving everything you can do with that is covered by TFS ALM is often like an 18-24 month period. And then by the time you get to the end, there's new changes, a new version and whatnot. So it's really continuous improvement. So it gives yourself a framework and a tooling for managing that continuous improvement process. I'll turn it over to question and answers if we still have enough.